your introduction and for the invitation. So so I would try today to so I have a strange title, maybe with three keywords, so random matrices, free probability theory, quantum information, so I know that I have good lower bounds on experts of the number of experts in each field of the each respective field in the audience, but I don't really have a upper bound, so I'll try to, maybe I will be too elementary, and then please forgive me. So basically what I would like to do is to is to explain somehow how these two things on which I'm going to be very elementary and slow can bring interesting insights in the for quantum information theoretic purpose. So I will just start with some notation, let's say, and well, I won't have too many notation, but I'm just going to denote by UN the group of unitary matrices in the n by n matrices, which I'm going to denote like that. And well, I mean, everybody knows that this is maybe the most important group that we want to study in quantum information theory. This is a compact group, so in particular, it has a unique so-called harmonger. So it has a unique so left and right invariant probability measure, which is the harmonger, and. Well, I guess that there is also this paradigm that if we would like to somehow to understand what happens with some so very often, let's say we would be interested in let's say trying to understand how a map like this behaves, and well, one of the questions which we might want to understand, I will make it more precise, of course, is well how such a map behaves typically. So more precisely, if I choose some unitary matrix here at random, how does it behave? So behavior of this with U chosen at random with respect to the harmonger. So here said like that, it's maybe not so interesting. Let's say if we just want to understand the eigenvalues, then nothing happens. Or if we want to understand the norm, any kind of reasonable operator norm, nothing happens. So let me maybe just for the purpose of stating non-empty results, replace this by something which is also quite useful in quantum information. It's called random unitary channel. So what I would like instead is to study this, the map. So let's say that I take an integer k, and I would like to study the map that to phi, let's say, that goes from 1 to k of ui x ui star 1 over k. So this is a map which goes from the n by n matrices. It's completely positive, trace preserving, unital. So this is So it's a quantum channel. And we are actually going to say, we are going to try to understand what happens to it as a motivating example in the setup where all these guys here are chosen at random. So I'm going to say that this is a random quantum channel with ui chosen I at random independently. Okay, so what I will first do is state two results, which is quite recent and quite non-trivial, and another one which has been kind of common knowledge, but which was proven formally only recently. So. Some results. So let me call it phi n. Some results about the random quantum channel phi n. So the first one is that with very high probability, let x be a pure state, so that is a rank one self-adjoint projection. What we have is that with a very high probability, with very high probability, phi n of x is very close to 1 over k times a projection of rank k. So this can be made completely rigorous. What you could say, for example, is, well, let's so x is a rank one operator. So what I'm doing is I'm adding k operators which are of rank one. So this is going to be typically an operator of rank at most k. With probability one, actually, it's going to be exactly an operator of rank k. Let p be the projection onto this. Onto the image of this operator. I look at 1 over k times this projection, and this vector is actually very close to that. Here I should, of course, state as n becomes big. Actually, if I look at it as a sequence, as n goes to infinity, I have that with probability 1 over any reasonable measure that I can, over any measure that I can put on such sequences whose marginal have the required distribution, the limit of this minus this tends to zero in the L1 norm or in the L infinity norm in any norm. So that's the first kind of result which I want to discuss, and the second kind of result. So here, actually, I have to say that I would not be able to be precise about the history of it. I think that this is things which have been observed in operator algebra, in Banach space theory, in quantum information theory, and pretty much at similar times, so don't really have it's almost some folklore somehow. Now let's look at a second kind of result, which would be something like that. The soup over states of phi n of x, so the operator norm of this, if you want, this is the largest eigenvalue. And here I just mean the positive trace one operators on Mn of C. Well, this soup actually, with extremely high probability, converges towards a quantity which can be explicitly computed, which is the following one, 4k minus 1 divided by k squared for all k larger than 2 and for all n. So let's say with very high probability as n goes to infinity. So somehow there is something which is going on with the quantifiers here.
There's no k on the left side.
Here, if you want, I should have one here. Means I have omitted it somehow. The idea is that I will always be looking at a sequence which depends on n. This is the point of view which I adopt. So of course, maybe for practical reasons, we would be more interested at let n be very large. But for the statements, it's good to have n which is fixed and looks at and study the sequence somehow. So that's why I only keep track of the n here. And in both circumstances, I am looking. Well, okay. So here I'm looking at pure states, and here I'm looking at a little bit more because I'm looking at all the states. But actually, it's the same thing because this soup is going to be reached on rank one projections on pure states. So somehow, if I choose one at random, it will behave like 1/k, 1/k all the time. It's eigenvalues. The first k eigenvalues would be 1/k and the other ones would be zero. Here also implicitly I suppose that n is larger than k. So whatever the choice at random that I make, I have something which is maximally mixed with respect to the dimension constraints. However, if I, instead of looking at one random choice, if I look at the worst case scenario, then I don't have 1/k anymore, but I have something which is rather like 4 times 1/k. And one could have thought maybe that the worst case scenario could have been even much worse or something like this, but it's not the case. It's neither that, nor something which has a different order of growth in respect to k. It's something which has the same order as 1/k, but which can be computed very precisely. So even though finding the soup will be something which will be extremely unlikely, we can tell when it will happen and what will not happen beyond that. So somehow I would like to tell now why these kind of questions are very closely related actually to random matrices and free probability theory. So let's say that I could call multi matrix, random matrix theory, we have a similar problem. Which is the following. Let U0, U1, U2, and so on. So I put N here, but I'm going to remove it at some point. Should be careful. Okay. So let these guys be IID R unitary matrices. And now what I would like to do is I would like to I would like to take P be a formal non-commutative polynomial in variables, which just for the sake of being formal, just 1 second, is something like this, U0, U1, so I just call them with small caps, and then U0 star, U1 star, like this. So they, it's just a polynomial, but the variables don't commute. And then what I would like to do is I would like to try to say, to understand the behavior of the random matrix so P applied to these random matrices here U0n U1n, and so on and so forth. With whenever I have a little u, I replace by its matrix value. Whenever I have a u star, I replace by the inverse or the conjugate. And now this formal polynomial is turned into a random matrix. And we'd like to understand the behavior of this random matrix, and more precisely, I would like to look at the global, more precisely, at the global singular value distribution. We like to draw a histogram of the singular values, and or if it's self-adjoint, the eigenvalues, and try to see what I can say as n goes to infinity.
So what do you mean by global?
So by global, what I mean is that if I call, so here I'm in dimension n, let's say that the singular values or the eigenvalues in the self-adjoint case, I write them like this, lambda 1n down to lambda nn. Then what I would like to understand is this random probability measure, 1 over n, sum for I between 1 and n of lambda I of delta lambda I n. So I would like to draw a histogram or repartition function, and to not really focus on what the 1,000th eigenvalue is or something, but really look in the space of distribution and try to study that. So it turns out, before I say something concrete about that, I'm just going to make one remark. That I'm going to allow the first one could be replaced. So if we want. By a nice constant matrix. And I'm just going, for the purpose of this talk, again, just to give one example, something which I could allow, for example, I could allow to have a projection, which would be of rank typically t times n, where t is a number, it's 0, 1. So actually, there are more things which are allowable, but I'm just going to mention that that example. So sometimes I want to go a little bit beyond the study of just random unitary matrices. I want to add one or a bunch of constant matrices. There exists a general notion which was developed by Voiculescu of having an asymptotic joint distribution which fits well there. But let me just stick to what I need to explain to advertise the use of free probability quantum information theory. So for example, So what we have is, well, loosely speaking, well, it's not so loosely speaking actually, but it's a theorem which was established under this form by Voiculescu in 1998. That almost surely, the histogram of singular values of, let me call this guy star, converges to a distribution which is, of course, a function of the polynomial. So far, what it tells is that I have chosen these guys as much as random as I could. They are just chosen according to the R measure, which is, one could say, the most general probability measure, the most generic probability measure on the group. And on top of that, I choose them at random. And now, if instead of looking at the random variable as a big set, if I just focus on some specific data of the random variable, namely the singular values, then if I just look at the histogram, then suddenly this highly random thing becomes non-random, and which worries, it converges towards a distribution which can be computed. So the rules of computation have been established by Voiculescu in the early 80s. Exactly. Almost surely converges exactly. So as n goes to infinity. And I wanted also to mention that here I wrote on purpose multi-matrix random matrix theory, because of course random matrix theory is in principle multi-matrix, but most of the results and actually most of the most precise results available in random matrix theory are available for one single, for random matrices which are obtained as just one polynomial, as a polynomial of one random variable. So somehow Voiculescu is arguably the first one who got a systematic way of making computation where they have independent copies of random matrices, and when they start to play with products of them. So the rule to compute the limit, well, this is what we could just call free probability. well, freeness. So this was invented by Voiculescu around 82, 83, maybe. Let's write something like this. Andrew can correct me, maybe. basically, I mean, here the rule is, let me just spell out how to reconstruct the rule in this specific case. Basically, the point is that if u, let's say, I0, ui1, ui2, let's say, epsilon1, epsilon2, epsilon3, and so on, is a non-trivial word. Okay, so then, so let me write. So if I look at this specific polynomial, which is just actually a non-commutative monomial, which is a non-trivial one, then p associated to this then the normalized trace of this converges to zero with probability 1. And basically this rule, well, at least this rule is the correct one if I did not make the replacement here. And with this, by linearity and by recursive applications of this rule, you can recover in principle an algorithm for computing all moments of the limiting measure, and therefore in principle to compute the measure. So actual techniques for computing it are the core of free probability theory. I'm not going to go too much into that, but this is the basic rule. And so let me give an example. Time is passing by very quickly. So example. So an example, if I look at P to be a projection of rank n over 2, approximately. And if I look at P plus U P U star, so I should say PN and then UN PN U star N. Well, then I am adding one projection with another projection which has been randomly rotated with the first one. And if I look at the spectrum of it, which are here going to be the singular values, what I will have is I will observe also that if n becomes large, it does not concentrate anymore. And actually, it will have a so-called arcsine distribution. So this function here is one over square root of x times 2 minus x to some constant. So its primitive is an affine transform of the arcsine. So it becomes deterministic. This is the histogram of eigenvalues. If I want to know how many eigenvalues in this random matrix are between 1 and 1.1, I just integrate this one. This is something like, you know, arcsine 1.1 minus arcsine 1 or something like that. And this tells me typically how many eigenvalues I will have there. Let me also mention another example. If I look now at the spectrum of Pn, Un, Pn, Un star, Pn. Mm-hmm. Now what I'm doing here is I take Pn here in the middle, I rotate it in a random way, and then I just chop the first upper left corner, let's say, without loss of generality. And what I obtain, of course, is that the spectrum, what I would have typically n over 2 delta zeros, well, here it would be 1/2 50% of eigenvalue 0. Clearly, I need to have that. And then I would have also 1/2 times, and here this is quite surprising, I have again the same arcsine law. There is a very deep reason actually why this is true, which I will mention soon. I mean, it can be shaped by computation, because here you know that the moments of the arcsine distribution, they are basically there are 2n choose n. So of the centered arcsine distribution. And with this you can check this result by hand. So in order to prove these results, so proof of this result, what we need is we need to compute moments of a random matrix, which is distributed according to the Haar measure. And how can we do that? Well, there exists first of all, what do I mean by that? I mean that what we would like to do is we would like to be able to integrate something like this, ui1, j1, uik, jk, and then u bar I prime 1, j prime 1, u bar I prime, k prime, j prime, k prime, with respect to the Haar measure. This is what one could call moments in the most general setup. Just look at all the coordinates. I think of them as coordinates of the vector space of matrices. And if I'm able to compute this, then I can tell anything about joint distributions of moments according to the Haar measure. So there are a couple of things which we can observe about that. That U actually contains S1, the unit circle. So if the number of U and the number of U bars here is not the same, automatically it will be zero, because if I make a change of variable if I make an irrational rotation, then I will have that something equals EI theta times the same thing, so it will have to be zero. So the only chance that this would be non-zero would be to require that I have as many k as k primes. And then the formula goes as follows. What I have to do is I have to look at all the ways I can pair an I, so a left index of the u's with a left index of the u bars, and the right index of the u's with the right index of the u bars. So by a pairing here, I mean a permutation that will send the lth element here into the sigma lth element, and same for the right. So let's say the sigma will pair the i's and the tau will pair the j. So they would both be permutations, k by k permutations, now that k equals to k prime. And what I would have is the product for I between 1 and L of delta I L I prime sigma L delta J L J prime tau L times something. Times something, which is a function which is now called WG, the Weingarten function, which depends on n and on sigma and on tau, actually, but it depends only on sigma and on tau in that way. And if I tell you how this function is defined, then we will be done. It's defined as follows. The function, if I look at this as an SK by SK matrix, so K factorial by K factorial matrix, this is the pseudo inverse of n to the number of cycles of sigma tau inverse. So here I will look into the cycle product decomposition, each permutation, if it has, let's say, if it's the identity and it has k fixed points, so then I have n to the k. If it moves everything around into a big cycle, then it has only one. And I create this matrix. I can do it with, you know, with Mathematica or anything. And I can ask for the pseudo inverse. And it gives me numbers. I put the numbers here, and I obtain an answer about how to compute that. So this is a term which I had established almost 10 years ago, but which we improved quite a bit with Shniadi in 2006. And actually this result turns out we can understand the asymptotic behavior of, we can understand quite well how this function behaves. And with this, we can give a direct proof of all these kind of results. We just have to say, well, let me look at the square of this matrix and its trace. Let me expand this, apply this formula, look at the leading terms, and this gives the answer. So there is some commentaries which I'm hiding, but the conceptual things are here actually. Okay. So now the last thing which I would like to mention, I won't mention everything which I hoped to, is somehow this deals completely about the case. Here we have completely the techniques to deal with the proof. With this, we could prove as well the first result which I stated. So namely the fact that if I look at phi n, it's of a pure state. This is sent with very high probability to a locally and maximally mixed state. We can just do it like that. So now we have, now this is what I could maybe call the worst case scenario study. And here, for this, what we have to look at, again, the next version of this, which is, so for two, the similar problem in multi matrix random matrix theory is what is the behavior of P of U0n, U1n, so always make the same polynomial. But now I'm not looking at the histogram of eigenvalues, but I'm rather looking at the largest eigenvalue. And let me give one example. I think then it will be more or less time to stop already. So let me give one example along the vein, along this vein. By the way, one reason why I gave this example is because this is almost the kind of example that we have to deal with when we are looking at the unitary channel which I was mentioning before. So how about, for example, now let's look at Pn plus U1 Pn U1 star plus U2 N Pn U2 N star. So once again, we could apply these computation techniques to observe that the limiting distribution would do something like this. Maybe, I don't know, maybe there would be some, be a little bit strange like this. Anyway, we have 0 here, we have 3 here. Obviously, I'm adding positive guys, so this should be positive, and all of them have norm 1, so the largest eigenvalue should be at most 3. Well, it turns out that this guy actually is going to be 2 square root of 2, which is strictly less than 3. So there we could, what these kind of techniques tell us is that the very vast majority of eigenvalues, they lie here. But nobody tells us that maybe 1 over square root of n eigenvalues could lie here. And then the histogram would just miss them, because it's any number which is little o of n would be missed. So the question is, do we have actually eigenvalues here or not? And the theorem, we obtained a much more general theorem, but let me still state the theorem like that. This is a result which I obtained with Camille Mal, which says that with very high probability, maybe I will state it in a funny way, but which is almost rigorous. There are no eigenvalues where there should be none as n goes to infinity. It's actually a rigorous statement. I mean, what it tells here, you see, is that if I look here or if I look there, there are no eigenvalues. Not only for that one. And this is actually true. This is true for all polynomials. So this actually answers a question which had been raised by Gilles Pisier more than 10 years ago, and which Uffe Hagerup had tried to settle somehow. So he did most of the work, but was just one trick which was missing, which we fortunately figured out. And so somehow we don't have a bad surprise. But somehow, so with how much time left do I have? Okay, so let me just mention quickly one application. Of this,
can just the question about this. So there are no random values, it means that really there are just a very small number. So you can have scales which are
okay.
Fractional power of n, you can have scales in log, not even log, like
no, it's zero. So the more precise statement, actually, the precise statement is take a compact set which is which is inside the complement of the spectrum. Okay? And then the probability that you have a single, that you have strictly more than one eigenvalue in this compact set goes to zero with probability one as n goes to infinity. Or actually, equivalently stated, it shows it. It turns out it's equivalent to say that the operator norm tends towards what it should. So, so one application. One application is okay. So let's. I'm not sure that I can. Okay. Okay, very, very difficult choice here. Maybe what I will do is, okay, I will just ask you to believe me that with this result we can prove quite easily the second result which I stated, namely the fact that the largest operator norm is 4 k minus 1 over k square. And what I will just do is I will state another application. And this is actually an application. Here, this is actually an ongoing work with Ion Nekita and Patrick Hayden. What I'm going to do is I'm going to let so k be an integer, and I'm going to take xn to be a GUE in mk tens mn. So GUE is a random matrix whose entries are Gaussian with self-adjoint symmetric condition. And so what I have is that I choose the variance in such a way that it is known that the eigenvalue distribution is like a semicircle, and it is known that as n goes to infinity, the eigenvalues, they converge to something which is called the semicircle distribution. And now what I will do is let mk tens mn. Mk tens mn. So I give myself a block structure to the matrix. But k is fixed. And what I will do now is I will let phi be a map which goes from mk to mn, whose Choi map is xn plus alpha. Plus, I'm just shifting a little bit my stuff. And what we have is that if alpha is okay, and now okay, let L be a number in 1k. What we have is that if the result is that if alpha is strictly bigger than 2L over k square root, then with probability 1, phi, so let me call it phi n is L positive as n goes to infinity. Which tells what? Which tells that as somehow these random techniques give me a systematic way of creating what one could call L entanglement witnesses somehow. So we have finding completely positive maps is not a problem. We all know how it works. But anything which is only one positive, two positive, or k minus one positive is something which is very, there is no general theory for this. And we dramatically lack examples. I mean, there are lots of examples here and there available, but nothing which is, as far as I know, not so many systematic things. And somehow these norm techniques give a very, very systematic way of obtaining positive maps, one positive maps which are not too positive. Because what I forgot to say is that this is kind of an if and only if statement. The only critical point is the critical case is the equality case, but everything else is going to be in if and only if. And so it gives lots of examples of some positivity, some say L positivity, but not L plus one positivity. And here I just gave the example with GUE, but actually I could have given it with any other limiting distribution thanks to this result. So this result, we just established this 1 year and a half ago, but it already has a couple of interesting applications to the study of the, let's say, worst case scenario for typical or random quantum jets. And I'm over time, so thank you very much.
Just the last point that I understood this correctly. So you choose alpha in an interval so that you make sure that it's two positive but not three positive.
Yes.
Alpha.
So you see the what was going on here basically is that if I look at x, typically the histogram of its eigenvalues should be between minus two and two. So if I shift by alpha, then it will the eigenvalues will be between minus 2 plus alpha and 2 plus alpha. So if I look at what happens for this kind of quantities, if L is strictly less than K, this will still be a negative number. We will still have a zero around there. So the Choi criterion tells me that this is not going to be a completely positive map. But I know, however, that this is going to be L positive for an L which is chosen in an appropriate way. And the reason for that is basically that we just apply this theorem with in setups like that. But since one of the strengths somehow of the theorem here is that here I wrote with very high probability. This is actually with probability 1 over the collection of sequences. So a countable intersection of things of probability 1 remains of probability 1. That's the small miracle of measure theory. And this is what allows us to use this result in this kind of setups, or also to obtain the worst case scenario.
So for those examples that you gave, you get more with the fine Cartesian function than what we have by just using the transforms. Like you could do those two examples with the R transform and the S transform, I suppose. Like it's the sum and the product, the free convolution in inaditive and multiplicative sense for the distribution of U is itself, but probably you can do more if you have this detailed analysis.
Well, actually, so I meant this as an illustrating example of what we can do. This is a we can do more. The computation techniques which I completely which I said about which I said that they exist, like the R transform and the S transform, they are useful, but I qualified them maybe wrongly as the combinatorial techniques to compute the thing, and somehow the focus here was on the fact that random matrices actually have this asymptotic freeness property, which was originally proved by Voiculescu by analytic techniques under additional assumptions of boundedness and so on, which actually turned out not to be necessary.
But with the Weingarten function, you can get better, like you get the control on what are the lower order terms in the various sums that mm-hmm. you're calculating. Is that useful, maybe? Like,
this is...
Knowing, like, control of variances and something like that.
Well, yes, we know that the variances, they behave like one over dimension square. But the only way that we use it concretely is via a Borel-Cantelli lemma. So to obtain an almost sure convergence with that. I guess, I'm not sure if Voiculescu had one over dimension square. He had something of probability, but yeah. I think he had concentration of measure instead.
Thank the speaker again.